Monster Man, special episode, Zorn. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode brought to you by the generosity and public spirit of my Patreon backers, and in particular, of Patreon backer Katie. If you'd like to be like Katie and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, you'll also get access to all new episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities, as well as the monthly bonus content that I put out for my patrons at all levels. So Katie, thank you very much, and I hope that you enjoy today's episode. Before we get started, I do have another favor to ask everyone. It is, as you may have heard, Zine Month 2023, and my new zine, The Guide to Grunts, has just gone up on Crowdfunder. There's a link down in the show notes below. If you feel like popping over there and taking a look at it, if you know my previous zine, The Pamphlet of Pantheons, is similar to that in concept. Pamphlet of Pantheons was about quickly and easily designing fantasy gods and religions for your fantasy RPGs. This is about militaries, but not in terms of their, like, you know, weapons or battles or what have you, but about, like, the culture and the people. So a bit like Pantheons, it's a systemless setting creation resource. Don't expect stuff about, like, troop numbers or how long the pikes are. There exist good resources for that. But so if you want to go check that out, or if you might feel like recommending it to a friend who you think would like it, I would really appreciate either of those. Okay, let's get on to the monster that Katie has requested. Katie has asked me to talk about a monster which is a favorite of her husband Stan, specifically the Zorn. The Zorn is a strange creature. It's an alien being, it has sort of trilateral symmetry, and it is native to the elemental plane of Earth. As far as I can tell, the Zorn is original to D&D. My notes say a creation of Gary Gygax, but I think that's just inference from whose name is on the cover of the book. The Zorn's motivation is that it wants gems, rare ones, or gems and other minerals that exist only on the prime material plane and not on the elemental plane of Earth. Don't ask me what kind of sense that makes. The Zorn are happy to search for these gems, which is why you find them in underground environments like mines and whatnot, but they're also happy to negotiate with passing creatures, or for that matter, to mug them. They have a tough rocky hide and a range of different Earth-related powers, including phasing through stone by, quote, adjusting their molecular structure, close quotes, and also detecting valuable metals by, apparently, smell. If I had to put the Zorn on some kind of D&D monster tier list, I would say that it is one of those early monsters that has remained part of the canon, like it's in most editions in some form, but it has never really made it to the big time. It's a C-lister, a ham and egger. It's a good worker, but it's not the main event. And there doesn't have to be anything wrong with that. Not every monster has to be the kind of monster where you pick up a module and say, heck yeah, this has got a Quattle in it. Not every monster is going to be a star. And maybe the Zorn is never going to be a star, but I do think that we can get it up from the C-lister position to a kind of well-loved supporting actor status. You know those performers, they appear in a movie and you say, oh good. I was going to say Rita Moreno is in this, but maybe Rita Moreno is a step too high. But, oh good, Tony Shalhoub. Oh good, Dan Hedaya. There, you get a little bit happier when you're watching a movie and you realize Dan Hedaya is in it. We might not be able to get this as far up as Stanley Tucci. Maybe, like, the early Tucci. But so you've probably noticed that this is something that I do in a lot of episodes. So I talk about monsters in this kind of, like, showbiz or wrestling or comic book kind of way. I consider them almost like I'm casting a show with them. Who's a good hand? Who's a headliner? And who, with just a little push, could get over? In the world of wrestling, and I believe the term originally comes from music, but in the world of wrestling, to get over is to be accepted by the fans, to have your gimmick work, right? They like your bit and they're willing to buy into it. And just like in gaming, it is hard to know when a performer is going to get over. But I actually don't, you know, having said that I want to put the Zorn over, I don't know that its problem is that it has a gimmick, but the fans have not yet accepted it. I think its problem may be more that I don't know that I have a very strong feeling of what its gimmick actually is. So if we're trying to make a star out of the Zorn, we have to think about what are the elements that make up a solid gimmick for a monster? What makes a monster memorable? Now, in the first category, I think that we're on pretty solid ground here. I would venture to say that there are some monsters that are better in games that use miniatures, and the Zorn is one of them, by which I mean that it has a strong and interesting visual identity. The Zorn is very weird looking, and its weird lookingness communicates some things about it. So it has that trilateral symmetry. The fact that that's not something you find on many Earth animals tells us instantly that we're dealing with an alien creature. It really does look like something that could be from another plane of existence. And its kind of pebbly hide suggests being an Earth monster without necessarily having like the obvious thing of it being made out of rocks or something. As a bonus, its thick pebbly hide is easy to paint if you use miniatures in your games, right? Those kinds of like rough textured surfaces really reward simple painting techniques like dry brushes or washing or using speed or contrast paints, right? They work very well on those kinds of surfaces and less so on kind of flat panels. So in the visual category, I think the Zorn is actually off to a pretty strong start in establishing its own kind of identity. However, the subsequent categories, I think the Zorn doesn't fare as well. For instance, let's take a look at the mechanics of the Zorn. Now, these vary from edition to edition, and actually, one of the interesting things about the Zorn is that it varies quite significantly in later editions. But it's interesting, like, while the on-paper stats and abilities of, say, a dragon have changed a lot over time, the idea that a dragon is kind of at the pinnacle of the combat, or maybe near the pinnacle anyway, of the combat threats in the game has seldom changed. It's just that the game underwent generations of hit point escalation. But the Zorn actually varies a good deal, and I think that that's because people who were working on the Zorn didn't think that its mechanical specifics were important to its identity, although I don't know what they did think was important to its identity. Typically, however, whether at like a high scale or a low scale, the Zorn is typically a high defense, low damage monster. It's resistant to or immune to a variety of different forms of damage. It has an incredible armor class. In AD&D First Edition, it has an armor class of -2, which is to say that it has a better armor class. I read this comparison on the web, so I'm sorry, unnamed person whose idea I'm stealing, but it has a better armor class than Bahamut, the unique platinum dragon who rules over all the good dragons. It also has a good escape power where it can phase through the rocks. What it doesn't have is very dangerous attacks, typically kind of underwhelming damage output. Now, this makes sense. The Earth image is one of like stolid defense. The Earth is tough and hard to damage. It's not something like fire, where we can imagine that fire like does a lot of damage but might be kind of ephemeral and short-lived. The Earth is patient and enduring. That all makes perfect sense. The problem is, not only does it make perfect sense, it's also boring. Because the Zorn's damage resistances, good AC, and low damage output tend to result in fights where nothing much really happens. It's just both sides failing to really do anything to the other one. And if the Zorn ever does find itself in danger, it's quite easy for it to leave. So I think that this means that if we're going to go looking for the Zorn's unique quality, we need to look beyond the battlefield. This is not a monster where the combat mechanics of it are what's going to make it stand out. So what about the Zorn's motivation? Now, I think that there are some beginnings of an interesting idea here. We know that Zorns come to this plane to eat rare minerals, but we also know that they eat things like silver. So this is meant to be just an attempt to create another mugger monster, a monster that doesn't necessarily have to fight the PCs, but can remove things that they want. A bit like the Disenchanter, but in much less obvious bad faith. Because it says that they snack on silver, so there must be minerals on the elemental plane of Earth that the Zorn can eat. I'm sure there's silver on the elemental plane of Earth. So stick a pin in that, because I'm going to talk about it in a moment. The problem with the Zorn's fixation on, you know, gems and precious metals and its ability to detect them is that it grounds the Zorn in... I'm going to prove I'm not truly old school here and say that this grounds the Zorn in a not very interesting part of the D&D experience. If you're playing a fantasy game, in general, I would say you are probably hoping for something more magical than grubbing for valuable ores in a mine where a million diamonds shine. like, there's a long tradition of mines and things being associated with fantasy. I get that, I do. But this is not the epic quest I was hoping for. And this is what I mean by saying I'm not old school, because, of course, old school play is not about epic quests. It's about grubbing for diamonds at a mine. Or whatever, right? And Zorns can be very helpful or very dangerous in your quest to just get a bunch of money. But to me, I like characters who are motivated by money but who wind up in other situations. I'm usually not that excited about playing a game where my reward is that I get a bunch of money. That's just burr number go up, right? It doesn't let you do it. Like, it's fun to imagine for a bit. A couple of sessions ago in the LARP that I play in, my group came into a windfall thanks to the real-world card-playing skills of one of my crew members. And that was a little fun, right? To, like, throw a bunch of money around and dive into it like Scrooge McDuck and whatnot. But it's lacking something. The typical Zorn encounter goes in a couple of stages. First, you meet some underground gem weirdo. Maybe you fight, maybe you don't. You talk and you come to a compromise in which the Zorn will lead you to precious metals and then, like, halvesies with you on them. This works once, and it gets across a valuable element of many D&D settings, which is you may meet this creature that looks like a total weirdo, but it actually is still someone you can talk to and someone that you can benefit from talking to, which is actually a more valuable lesson about the game in general than necessarily just the Zorn specifically. I get that. That's fine. And you can have variations on this. A common example is bad guys capturing a Zorn and using it to locate gold or whatever, and then you have to free the Zorn. That makes sense too. But again, there's kind of just a couple of sessions worth of idea here. Again, not that there's anything wrong with that. But if I had to say what I think is missing from the Zorn as written, I'd say it's kind of personality. Zorns are as intelligent as humans, but we don't really get any sense of that in their Monster Manual entry. Not that we get it with most creatures, but I feel like a creature that is so strange needs something for the mind to hold on to, and that is to say, giving it a bunch of personality. The Zorn are kind of boringly single-minded as well, and I think that you can compensate for that basically by making being single-minded their bit. And I think you can play this a number of ways. The first relies on the idea that, they sort of all do, rely on the idea that the Zorn are perfectly capable of surviving based on things that they eat on the elemental plane of Earth. Very hard to imagine how a creature would even exist that had to go to another plane in order to get the things it needed to survive. So if the Zorn can eat the rich chocolatey loam on the elemental plane of Earth or whatever, why does it come to the prime material plane? I like the idea that Zorn are food truck hipsters. It's not that they can't eat the rich chocolatey loam on the elemental plane of Earth. It's just that everybody eats the rich chocolatey loam, and they want to go to the cool spots where the locals hang out. Oh, you haven't been to the prime material plane? Such a great place, such a vibrant culture. You can just see them now following particular prime material plane minds on Instagram. So I like this idea that they're connoisseurs. They're there for the exotic minerals that they can't find anywhere else. And the longer they're at it, the more and more exotic things have to be in order to satisfy them. You can play that for comedy, which is kind of how I just described it with the food truck hipster Zorn. I think you can also play it almost as a kind of addiction, that they're weird sensation junkies hooked on getting ever more and more extreme mineral sensations. And this could help make them a little unreasonable when they're dealing with player characters. Like, I know you have the minerals. I can smell them. Give me the minerals, man. Give me the minerals and nobody gets hurt. So I think there's something there, that this is a kind of compulsion. Another possibility is to take them full tilt alien. You know, this is a three-armed, goat-eyed rock monster from another dimension. So it may be as intelligent as you, but that doesn't mean that it shares your concerns or your frame of reference. When you refuse to give it all your gold pieces, it may think that you are being very unreasonable. After all, you can't even eat gold. So why are you carrying it around in all these bags and pouches, taking it away from the creatures that need to eat it? You can't fool me. I've heard all about you biological creatures. You eat grass. I read it. So think making the Zorn an ally that could be useful to the player characters, because it has the ability to sniff out valuable metals and gems, but that's very hard to get to work with you, not because it's opposed to you, but because it's just so bizarre and alien that it can't really understand exactly what you want without a good deal of explanation. All of these, I think, complement the Zorn's appearance to a certain extent. The first and third, the most so. The alien creature identity is reinforced by the Zorn's weird appearance, whereas the food truck hipster, that concept establishes like a pleasing contrast between the Zorn's readily identifiable human behavior and their monstrous alien appearance. So which one of these you choose depends on your campaign, depends on the tone, depends on all these different factors, and maybe there are better alternatives to the ones that I've put forward, but I do think that I'm right when I say that what the Zorn are missing is a personality. One doesn't get a feel of what they are like to interact with, and that's important because they're not just boot-in-the-door slaughter monsters. They're willing to use force if need be, but they're not in general aggressive. The most obvious personality to give them is reasonable, but reasonable arrangements about the sensible sharing of mineral resources, while very valuable in the real world, are kind of boring within the context of a dungeon adventuring game. And insofar as these relations with Zorns exist, I almost feel like they have that kind of didactic quality, like, you know the kind of thing. See? You don't have to fight every monster. Sometimes talking to them and being friends can be fun. I mean, I 100% support that idea, but I do think that there is this kind of strain of didacticism in the way that people talk about RPGs that is doubly infuriating because it is recapitulating lessons that I internalized 30 years ago. This is, of course, one of those things that somebody needs to hear, but it's just that somebody isn't me. Anyway, I do think that there is a potential for a Zorn makeover. I think it's got to start with their weird appearance, which is probably their standout feature, and I think the way to deal with it is probably not by tinkering with the mechanics, although you could, but more likely to be just giving the Zorn a little bit more of a personality for when you want to roleplay with them. If I ran out of time for this episode, or rather if I didn't, if I said everything I had to say about Zorns before the time limit, I was also going to talk about Umber Hulks. And I will say, just in passing, that I think Umber Hulks have some of the same problems as Zorn, which is that they are just big bug guys that you fight underground, and they're fine, but the most distinctive thing about them is what they look like. Having said that, they're actually changing constantly, but in most of them, they look cool in some way. They feel a little bit like an abandoned action figure idea, right? Not much more than an appearance and a one-note gimmick. The problem with them is that unlike the Zorn, you can't really give them a culture or society because they're not as intelligent as the Zorn. So where are you going to find the makeover potential in the Umber Hulk? I don't know, except maybe in its actual like combat and combat tactics. The book talks about Umber Hulks dragging people away, and I love that idea. It kind of goes with the antlion appearance, right? Umber Hulks grabbing someone and then diving into one of their burrows, and you have to chase them through this lightless, root-choked passage. I think there is something to that, kind of like the Wampa in Empire Strikes Back, but for dirt rather than snow, I guess. So, not much discussion of Umber Hulks, but I do think that, again, they just need a little more atmosphere, and right now, they sort of don't have anything. So that's what I reckon about the Zorn, with a little bit of extra time on Umber Hulks. Katie, thank you very much for your continued support, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Everyone else, just remember that if you'd like to be like Katie and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. Or, if you would prefer, you can pledge at a different level and get the rewards for that. I am not the boss of you. In our next episode, we're going to be continuing our journey through Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. So I hope that you'll join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. So that's what I reckon about the Zorn, with a little bit of extra time on Umber Hulks. Katie, thank you very much for your continued support, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Everyone else, just remember that if you'd like to be like Katie and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. Or, if you would prefer, you can pledge at a different level and get the rewards for that. I am not the boss of you.